True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is projected for what in 2021? Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, December 1st. Give yourself a pat on the back because you've made it to the final month of the craziest year I've ever lived through. Frank Stanfill reunited by Scott T. Dubs, Scott White, who has a Christmas tree in the background. If you are watching on YouTube, youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday, you could see Scott White's Christmas tree for all of December. Absolutely fantastic. Huge fan of Christmas and the Christmas spirit in general. I would take everyone for a tour around my house and you could see all the decorations, but I'm not going to do that. Scott, what's up, man? How was your Thanksgiving?
Yeah, well, since I podcast right here from my living room, it's kind of unavoidable that you see the decorations, but I think it looks nice. It's nice and festive. We got the white lights on right now. Maybe some recordings, I'll go for the multicolored lights. I don't know. Are you more into the white lights or the multicolored lights for your Christmas tree, Frank?
I would say white is probably more Christmassy, but
yeah.
I don't mind changing it up. If you have some white and some of the multicolored ones together, you just kind of go for it all on the Christmas tree. You can make that happen.
I think the white looks a little classier. Like the old school candle look, you know, on the tree. Which is what those lights are meant to represent. Colorful, you know, that's kind of for the kiddies, I feel like.
Yeah. But,
and there's, and I can say we do have arguments between the adults and the kids whether to put the tree on the white lights or the multicolored lights. But it's nighttime, so that's the parents' time, and they're white right now.
Yeah. Are you a bigger Christmas guy than you are Thanksgiving?
I would say Christmas is my favorite holiday, yes.
Alrighty.
Not that Thanksgiving isn't great.
Yeah, but I asked you about it a couple of weeks ago, and you were just like, you know, was that Thanksgiving? Maybe that was Halloween. I'm getting my holidays mixed up.
Yeah.
All right, well, something that I know Scott is thankful for is one-year deals, especially when it comes to his Atlanta Braves, who the past couple of seasons, Josh Donaldson, Marcelo Ozuna, have really hit on these one-year contracts, and we didn't give you the opportunity to react to Charlie Morton signing with your Atlanta Braves, Scott. But now you can do just that. He was not very good this past season in 2020. He dealt with injuries and the velocity being down, but then turned it on once the postseason started. So what is your reaction to him joining the Atlanta Braves? Have you moved up your rankings in terms of starting pitchers? He's moving up ADP a little bit right now, so I think people are getting a little bit more excited now that they know where he's going to be pitching in 2021.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the tweet where I had a good stat for Charlie Morton, and for some reason it's not coming up, but I didn't move him up with this deal. I knew he would sign somewhere to be a regular guy who takes his regular turn in the rotation. He wasn't very good this past year compared to the previous 2 years, but I can tell you as a Braves fan, he was better. You know, I like the track record Charlie Morton's shown more than I do the one Cole Hamels showed before he got a bigger one-year deal last year. So from that context, I feel good about it. He struggled early on with a sore shoulder and the velocity was down. He was one of a few pitchers early in the year where like the velocity wasn't quite right. But Morton's recovered over time after he had an IL stint for the shoulder, came back looking better, to the point that if you combine his regular season stats with his postseason stats, he had a strong postseason. He ended up with a 4.03 ERA, 1.31 WHIP, 10.1 K per nine. I'm not saying that ERA and that WHIP is great, but for the K rate, for a down season, for a guy who just by virtue of the amount of high-end pitchers out there is going to get pushed down to around 40th in the SP rankings, probably. You could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse. I think it's a good deal for the Braves, and I think you know, if you're getting Morton as like your number five guy in fantasy, it's all upside at that point.
Yeah, I have him as my SP 36 as of now in the ranks. So as of now, people can just see our top 36. And I know, Scott, you don't have him in there. So just outside that range for you. And in terms of where he's being drafted, we did a Roto mock draft a couple of weeks ago, our first official mock draft of the offseason. And Charlie Morton went 84th overall in that mock draft, which seems a little high. It's the last pick of the seventh round. His NFBC ADP over the past week or so is 116.3. So I would say if we split the difference, I think he probably winds up somewhere around pick 100, maybe like 100 to 110 in that range. But yeah, I think if you get him as your SP4, SP5, if you're really aggressive early on.
You know me, Frank. He's not going to be less than a five for me. Come on.
Oh, I know. If you haven't figured out by now, today on the show, we are going to look at some 2021 projections from Steamer, which you can find over on Fangraphs, and we do have some of your mailbag questions to answer a little bit later on. I wanted to hit on a few more news and notes outside of Charlie Morton, now that we got Scott's thoughts there. There really isn't a lot to talk about. The Royals, apparently, are the only team making moves, Scott. Big moves. They signed Mike Minor to a two-year deal, and Michael Taylor, formerly of the Nationals, to a one-year deal. Roster Resource has Michael Taylor as a platoon center fielder with Franchy Cordero, so I don't really think that there's much to see there. And Mike Minor, I think, will probably be in their rotation. The good news for Minor, his fastball spin rate, according to StatCast, ranked in the 97th percentile last season. The bad news was everything else. He had a 5.56 ERA. His fastball velocity dropped 2 miles per hour, went from 92.6 in 2019 to 90.6 in 2020. So anything to see here with either of these signings, Scott? Probably more so Minor, I would imagine.
Yeah, is it 100% clear whether he signed to... I guess he's going to start out in the rotation, right? Considering it's the Orioles, though. Considering it's the Royals.
Yeah, it's not 100% sure. I'm just kind of assuming right now.
I mean, Singer, Bubich, Keller, Danny Duffy, they're all probably locked. So there's really only one spot Minor can earn. And if any of those, either of those other two young pitchers come up as aggressively as Bubich and Singer did this year, those other two young pitchers being, I can't recall off the top of my head, Jackson Kuwar and Daniel Lynch, then Minor probably gets bumped to the bullpen. He was supposed to go to the bullpen when the Athletics acquired him, but then a need arose for him to be in the rotation. And I'm not really sure he has what it takes there. I mean, especially if the velocity is going to be down like it was last year. Maybe that was just a fluke of the shortened season and the hurried buildup. But even in 2019, when Minor looked great, he had a 460 xFIP. We had reason to worry about him. Last year, his xFIP was actually lower, 450 versus 460, even though the results weren't good. So I don't have a lot of hope for Minor as a fantasy asset at this point. But, you know, he has some success in his past. And if he gets off to a hot start, I won't just ignore him.
Yeah, if we can get those two start weeks with the Tigers and the Indians, right? That could be somewhere where he's in play. But yeah, for Mike Minor and Michael A. Taylor, just names to pay attention to in AL only as of now. Early 2021 projections, standouts via Steamer on Fangraphs. What are Steamer projections? You might have listened to other podcasts and heard people reference Steamer before. We've referenced Steamer a little bit here on the show as well. But per MLB.com's glossary, Steamer is a system of projections developed by Jared Cross, a high school science teacher in, you guessed it, Brooklyn, and two of his former students, Dash Davidson and Peter Rosenblum. It is currently used by Fangraphs as its primary projection system for individual players. Like other projection systems, Steamer uses past performance and aging trends to develop a future projection for players. It also uses pitch tracking data to help forecast pitchers. On Fangraphs, the projections are updated daily and predict each player's numbers over the course of the remainder of the season. So, something that you can look at in season as well. Scott, before we actually jump into specific players, I know before we started the show, we were talking a little bit and you said you have some thoughts on projections just in general. Would you like to share those?
Part of the reason we don't talk about projections more is because I don't really believe in projections. That's like my hottest fantasy baseball take.
Spicy.
And it's worded in the most, controversial way possible. But my point is that I don't think they have a lot of utility in fantasy analysis. I think what projections do best, their best purpose is if you landed here from outer space and you didn't know anything about baseball, these names were all completely foreign to you, but you had to get a grasp of you had to do in a very short amount of time, get a grasp of what kind of player every player is. Projections can help with that because they oftentimes do kind of summarize the past few seasons of what a player has contributed. But if you're like us or people who play fantasy baseball religiously, then you kind of already know who everybody is. You don't need the projections to tell you that. And so what they can actually... So what they actually then end up doing is they can be misleading because they create this hypothetical outcome that, you know, is of course just one scenario of many, but it kind of becomes this outsized scenario in terms of expectations and can influence rankings in ways that are potentially harmful. Maybe the guy just got a bad projection, for instance. Looking at these Steamer projections, one that really stood out to me was Hyunjin Ryu, projected for a 4.16 ERA. Well, I mean, the highest ERA Hyunjin Ryu has had the past 3 years is 2.69. So 4.16 ERA, if you're going to base your rankings on projections, that's obviously going to skew where he ends up. Now, maybe Ryu is going to age very rapidly this year and have an ERA over 4. I would be shocked if his ERA is that high. I would eat my hat if Hyunjin Ryu has a 4.16 ERA. How about that?
I will ship you this hat, Scott, and you can eat it live on the air.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just one example. But, you know, even something more, even if you agree that the projection is maybe the most likely outcome for a player, which is, you know, probably true in most cases. Projections tend to be kind of middle of the road in what they put for a player. There might be a wider range of outcomes for that particular player. Maybe he's just a young guy breaking in and has a very high ceiling. Well, you're obviously going to want to rank him higher than the middle of the road projection. And same, you know, maybe the opposite is true if it's an older guy or an injury prone guy. So I don't love projections. I don't love how they're often applied for fantasy baseball purposes. And I'm not sure there is much of an application for them, like I said, other than to give you a starting point for rankings that then you go and make aggressive changes to.
Yeah. And I do want to hit on just specifically these Steamer projections. They are more conservative than, I guess, what you would expect, right? So Hyunjin Ryu with an ERA over 4, as you'll see with some of the other names that we'll talk about, it's not really dissimilar from other pitchers that he has projected in that range, right? So we'll get into some of those. I don't want to completely downplay projections because I think there is some use for them, Scott. And I'm not saying that you said that, but these are mean projections, right? So this is like their 50th percentile outcome, and their 90th percentile could be, you know, for Ryu, it could be whatever, sub 3 ERA like we saw 2 seasons ago. His 10th percentile projection could be, okay, 5.00 ERA over the course of 100 innings where he just gets hurt and just completely falls off the map. So these are mean projections. the most likely outcome.
And of course, by mean, you mean unkind, right? No, you don't.
You mean average.
Well, they are kind of mean to Ryu.
They are.
And actually, they're kind of mean to all the pitchers.
Yes, they are kind of mean to all the pitchers. And we will start there. We've talked a lot about workload for next season and what it's going to look like. And Steamer currently has 5 starting pitchers projected for 200 innings in 2021. 40 projected for at least 180. That's a little bit more aggressive than I thought. But back in 2019, we did have 15 starting pitchers who went 200 innings and 33 that went at least 180. So I guess you factor that in where some of these are not going 200 anymore. They drop back down to that 180 threshold. All right, we meet somewhere in the middle. I think we're probably in that 30 to 40 pitcher range in terms of how many we could expect to get to at least 180 innings. Those 5 that are projected for 200 plus, Shane Bieber, Trevor Bauer, Jacob DeGrom, Garrett Cole, and Germán Márquez. So he's kind of the surprise one in there, but everyone else kind of makes sense. One of these pitchers that are projected for close to 200 innings is Lucas Giolito, who is projected for 196, but also projected for a 4.16 ERA, a 1.26 whip, 226 strikeouts. And I remember last year, Seamer really did not like Lucas Giolito either heading into 2020. Even before we knew it was going to be a shortened season, I remember this stood out to me, and they were just way off on Lucas Giolito. So I wanted to ask Scott, like, is there anything that you are specifically worried about for him? Because I brought this up in our early pitcher preview. It's just something that's in the back of my mind where you have to take Giolito, which is, as of now, the second round. Maybe in 12-team leagues he falls to the early third round. But he had a 2-start stretch, one of those including the no-hitter against the Pirates. The other start was against the Tigers, where he threw 16 shutout innings with 26 strikeouts in 16 innings pitched. His other 10 starts outside of those two, a 4.49 ERA. Is that where you at all, Scott?
No, not really. It's always tricky slicing and dicing a pitcher's game log like that, but especially when you're talking about a sample of 12 starts. And especially since, I mean, the underlying numbers point to a lot of the same reasons for success as in his 2019 breakout. My biggest concern for Lucas Giolito is that the walk rate went up this past year. He had of those 12 starts, half of them, he had 3 walks or more, which isn't great. 3 walks in a start is never a good thing. So that would be my biggest concern. But I think when he's in the strike zone, he's very effective, and he still ended up with a 104 whip. I have more faith in Giolito than I did at this time a year ago. I don't think I'm totally confident yet. I know exactly where in the elite range of starting pitchers he falls. If he's more going to settle in as a back end of the top 20 guy or back end of the top 10 guy. But I think he's going to be good. You know, I have as much confidence saying that about him as really any pitcher outside of the top 3.
Yeah, and I think that's well said. Is while I want to move Giolito down the ranks a little bit, I have him at SP7, same spot where you have him, Scott, and it's just everybody in this range, you kind of have something you're worried about. Kershaw, the back, he's getting older. Trevor Bauer, can he repeat what he did in this shortened 2020 season? Is he legit? Jack Flaherty, okay, workload concerns. He had a weird COVID season. Scherzer's getting up there in age. Buehler, workload concerns. Gallen has only done it for 15, 20 starts so far. So, I mean, we have concerns with all these guys. I don't know how much further I can move him down, but these things are just in the back of my mind. He has shown a little bit of inconsistency at times. He does go very deep into his starts, which is something I like a lot for head-to-head points leagues specifically, Scott, and we know that it helps, that correlates well with wins. So pitchers who go deeper into their starts are more likely to earn wins. So Giolito has really developed into that workhorse-type pitcher. One other thing I noticed this year, really, really reliant on that changeup. Fastball took a bit of a step back in terms of command, but I want to see that slider get back on track. He's fine. It's just, these are things in the back of my mind when it comes to Giolito. to Nelson Lamet.
One thing I want to mention in relation to the steamer projection of the 4.16 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm noticing across these steamer projections is that 2020 is being mostly disregarded. It was just such a small sample, I think, that it gets swallowed by everything else that's being considered. Giolito threw 72 and a third innings, even though he didn't miss a start, I don't think. 72 and a third is all he ended up with, which means he has only two career seasons with more than 100 innings. They're both more than 170 innings. So those two seasons really stand out for Giolito in terms of sample. One of them, he had a 3.41 ERA, obviously the breakout 2019 season. But the other one, he had a 6.13 ERA. So if past performance is being factored in for all these pitchers and one of them's a 6.13 ERA, of course it's going to skew the projection.
No, and that's a really good point. Again, these projections, they take the past two or three seasons plus where they do factor in some kind of progression for specific players, as we will learn with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a little bit later on. And maybe even for this guy, Denelson Lamet. I mentioned his name just a little bit ago. He's projected to be the ninth most valuable starting pitcher, according to Steamer. They have this auction calculator on FanGraphs where you can use the projections to find out how valuable a player is. And Denelson Lamet comes out as the ninth most valuable starting pitcher. And his projection, a 3.62 ERA, 1.18 whip, 11.4 K per nine in 173 innings pitched. Scott, I liken Denelson Lamet, knowing what we know now, to the Yordan Alvarez of pitchers. Because I think inside the top 20 starters, him, Lamet, Strasburg, Trevor Bauer, those three really come to mind as the three pitchers who might have the widest range of outcomes that are being drafted this early so far for 2021 drafts. So what do you think of that comp? That I just think he's like the biggest wild card to Nelson Lamet, where if he stays healthy, he can be awesome, but obviously ending the season with this biceps injury, not being able to pitch in the postseason, it's usually a precursor for worse injuries to come.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's recently removed from Tommy John surgery, too. I think performance-wise, he blew away all expectations. He was kind of a trendy breakout pick, but kind of like Shane Bieber 2 years ago, whatever breakout people were imagining for it, he went beyond that. I mean, he was top 10 in both XFIP and swinging strike rate. He was great. But can we be confident he's going to be healthy? And can we be confident he's going to take on a workload comparable to others in the range he's going to be drafted in, considering the injury history and the fact that he didn't get to really extend himself in this very short season? So I want to like Lamet more than I feel like I can. I don't think I'm going to be heavily invested in him just because for the cost, it seems like too much risk.
So of the 12 starts he made in 2020, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, he went at least 6 innings. So, all right, about half. He's not in that tier of workhorse pitcher yet. We know that walks could still be a bit of an issue at times, and they kind of worked him in slowly to start the season. His first three starts were all below 6 innings, so all right, he got better as the season went along. I think the upside is tremendous. The slider, you can argue, was one of, if not the best pitch among starting pitchers in the entire 2020 season. I mean, it was that good, and he threw it over 50% of the time, which is just crazy. It's like Patrick Corbin on steroids from a couple of years ago. But yeah, for me, Lamet, the Yordan Alvarez of pitchers, just the ultimate wild card. Lots of upside, but also lots of downside. Speaking of trendy 2020 breakouts, these are our trendy 2021 breakouts, Scott. And Corbin Burnes and Zach Plesac. These two, we talk a lot about Corbin Burnes and what to project for his innings. Steamer has him for 158. Might be aggressive for Corbin Burnes, but a 4.12 ERA, 1.32 whip, and just over 10 strikeouts per nine. That's for Corbin Burnes. And then you sent me this one, and I think this is where they're taking into account what Zach Plesac has done in his career thus far, and really not baking in him progressing and carrying over what he did in 2020. But a 4.73 ERA projection with under 8 strikeouts per 9. Does give you 174 innings. Scott, I don't think people would be excited about that for Zach Plesac. And there is a contingent of people, Scott, because I'm doing a few NFBC drafts, who really like Plesac. I'm talking like he's being drafted inside the top 20 starting pitchers in these drafts that I've been in so far. So,
I think, yeah, I have him in my top 25. He was number 2 in fantasy points per start this year, behind only his teammate Shane Bieber. Only made 8 starts, but 2.28 ERA, a 0.8 whip. Actually, it was a little less than that. I have to round up to 0.8. And more than a strikeout per inning, really changed his pitch mix. But even as a rookie, 21 starts, he had a 3.81 ERA, so nowhere near this 4.73 mark. And something weird is going on with the ERAs in these projections. I don't know if it's kind of normalizing to the center of the pitching pool so that, you know, it's not really reflecting the disparity between the high-end pitchers and the rest that we see today, because, I mean, pretty much all these guys are projected for high ERAs. We, of course, mentioned Ryu and Giolito, both projected for 4.16. Dylan Bundy, 4.54. Aaron Nola, I think, is like 3.90. Yeah, 3.90. I mean, Jacob DeGrom's the only one projected for lower than 3. He's at 2.96.
My man.
Yeah. Charlie Morton's 3.76, so that's actually not so bad, especially considering the year he just had. But again, it was a drop in the bucket compared to the previous 2 years. Lucas Giolito, 3.65. I mean, that's pretty high. Another one that struck me as interesting, because the track record ERA wise is actually quite good, is Julio Urias, who Steamer projects for a 4.41 ERA. Trying to remember exactly what his highest ERA to this point has been. So this year it was 3.27. Last year, mostly in relief, granted, but it was 2.49. But Julio Urias is a guy who has greatly outperformed his expected stats pretty much from the beginning, because he doesn't have this great strikeout rate, unless you look at what he did in the playoffs, and maybe that's a sign of things to come for him. Who knows? Not an exceptional control pitcher, but he limits hits. He limits hard contact. Not something I normally bank on from year to year, but Urias is developing a pretty good track record of it. And of course, he comes from a great prospect pedigree, still isn't even 25 yet. So he's kind of a weird pitcher to evaluate, Julio Urias. Of course, we don't know exactly how the Dodgers are going to treat him. Is he just going to be stuck in this swingman role for as long as he's with them, going 3 and 4 innings at a time? Who knows? But a difficult pitcher to evaluate. The Steamer projection, I think, kind of shines a light on that.
The last thing I just wanted to bring up, Scott, was regarding Plesac and Corbin Burns. I mentioned where they're going. In this early ADP, Plesac 59.4, Corbin Burns 59.7, as the 19th and 20th starting pitchers, respectively. That means if you're drafting in a 12-team league, Scott, you're taking these guys at the end of the 5th round, early 6th round. And for most people, that's probably as your SP3. Would you be comfortable with either one of these guys? Plesac,
Corbin
Burns? I feel
like for me, that's SP3. For most people, it would be...
It might even be SP2. Right? Yeah, right. Yeah. It just seems like we might be putting... For those two guys, I understand what the upside can be based on what we saw. It was a shortened season. It seems like this early value is putting a little bit too much weight on the shortened season.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Because things can change pretty fast at pitcher. They can change pretty fast. If you buy the reasons for Plesac's improvement, and I have him 25th, so I have him lower than this early consensus too. I think there comes a point where you can't put him much lower. Because 26th, I have Kyle Hendricks, who's always been
meh,
definitively second or third tier, right? Max Fried comes after that. I have my concerns about him. Zach Wheeler, there are limits to his upside. Sonny Gray, kind of questionable. Framber Valdez. I mean, you get into some dicey territory after too long. And Zach Plesac did some really impressive things this past year. I think more than anything, it reflects why I don't want to be I don't want to be in a position at starting pitcher where he ends up by number two. I don't want to pass up the more secure options at that position, pursuing a lot of more questionable guys.
Fair. It's Plesac and Burns, just polarizing guys that we're going to have to figure out basically all offseason long. Did a lot of really great things, but trying to figure out what they will do next season is an interesting task. We're gonna take a quick break. I do just want to let everybody know that every Wednesday in December, Will Middlebrooks and Danny Vietti will be dropping a podcast in the Fantasy Baseball Today feed. So starting this Wednesday, our programming schedule is not changing. You will still hear Scott and myself twice per week. We'll have a guest on later in the week. Actually, this week we have Ellen Adair coming on, and she's been on the podcast each of the past two off seasons. So really looking forward to that. But every Wednesday in December, four podcasts total. Will Middlebrooks, former Boston Red Sox player and analyst for CBS Sports HQ, will join Danny Vietti. They'll be talking more general baseball things, but they have some really good interviews lined up. They already interviewed Jackie Bradley Jr. You'll hear that this Wednesday. They asked Jackie Bradley Jr. about JD Martinez, this whole him not being able to use in-game video. So I'm really interested to see what Jackie Bradley had to say about that. They have an interview with Adam Jones lined up, another one with Justin Upton. So you'll hear that all throughout the course of December. So if you hear a random voice in your feed, don't be alarmed. This is where it's supposed to be. And of course, mentioned earlier, subscribe to our YouTube channel. I'm wearing my Home Run Hermanos shirt. You see this, Scott? This is little Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado. Home Run Hermanos. So Padres meeting Breaking Bad, the best show.
Oh, yeah.
You can
very
see,
good.
You can see that here.
I got
here.
My pixelated Bowser shirt on.
Okay. All right.
Original Mario Brothers.
I see you, Scott. You can see
and a Christmas tree.
And a Christmas tree. You can see all of it.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. We just crossed 1,800 subscribers. So let's get to 2K by the start of spring training. So late February, early March. I think that's a nice little goal for us to set forth. Take a break. When we return, we'll hit on some of these hitter projections that we found interesting here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Well, just before we get to some of these hitter projections, Scott filled me in with some fantastic news here throughout our break that he did his homework assignment and he watched Eurotrip. Scotty now does know. What do you think, Scott? Was it good? Did you enjoy it?
Well, Frank, I love you. I love you. You got a lot of good baseball opinions.
Oh, Scott hated it.
You run a good show here. We have very different tastes in movies.
Oh,
Frankie, not gonna lie.
To be fair, I watched this movie in my teens, so it was part of like me growing up. It was part of my life.
Yeah.
It has shaped me into the man that I am today. But no, you weren't into it, Scott.
I'm even disappointed by the setup to Scotty Doesn't Know, because like
it's pretty messed up.
Well, you already you already knew what's revealed and Scotty doesn't know. It seems like the song itself should have been the big reveal. Like that would have been a more dramatic. I don't know if it would have been too crushing for a comment. I don't know. But, you know, it seemed like a missed opportunity. But, I mean, the whole movie was made by some objectively untalented people. So I'm not.
Oh, Scott. Oh,
I guess I shouldn't go too hard on them. We're grading on a curve here.
Look, I didn't make the movie. I just enjoy it. So
yeah,
Miscusi. No, it's got nothing. All right. Enough Euro trip here. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. mentioned him at the very top of the podcast. And it's kind of unexplainable, Scott, because for all these other projections we've talked about, they take into account very heavily, it seems like they weigh what a player has done to this point in their career. And to this point, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a 778 OPS. He has not lived up to expectations. But for some reason, maybe they're buying into all these videos and him losing weight in the offseason. Like, people are going to go crazy for Vlad again. I get it. Projected for a .299 batting average, 31 home runs, 94 runs, 99 RBI, and a .902 OPS. That would be a 124-point jump from his career mark, which I mentioned is .778. What are we doing, Scott?
Well, I think this kind of speaks to why he keeps getting drafted earlier and earlier. Early's not sliding at all. Even with him underachieving for 2 years in a row. I mean, this is kind of like the dream scenario for Vladimir Guerrero, right? The best case outcome is a little higher than this, but it's not a lot higher than this, you know? So it's considering projection systems by nature are conservative, this is very, very aggressive projection.
Yeah, and people are going to continue to chase it. I get it. Prospect pedigree. He's awesome. I want Vlad to succeed myself. He's played 183 games in his major league career, and he's hit .269 with 24 home runs. Does that mean he can't progress and get better? No, absolutely not. But just seems very aggressive, as you highlighted, Scott. Let's play a game.
Ooh.
Scott, would you like to guess Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s ADP in the month of November? Over at the NFBC?
Over at NFBC, which tends to swing for the fences with the picks.
Yep.
Right. So upside guys tend to go earlier. How many drafts has there been?
23. A decent 23 amount.
23 drafts. 42.
All right. Well,
I overshot it. I overshot it, and now it's not gonna have the same sizzle anymore.
It wasn't that aggressive, but okay. It's 58.9. And he's basically going at the same spot as Luke Voit. So Luke Voit is 58. Vlad is 58.9. In the Roto mock draft that we did, Vlad went 87th overall in the 8th round. So,
and let me see where I have him ranked. I have him ranked 91.
All right.
In Roto.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, the mock draft that we did is pretty close to that then. So,
yeah.
All righty. We continue.
You don't seem to like that, Frank.
Continue. I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm higher than you on Vlad. I want to believe, but I'm not projecting him for. To me, a realistic projection for Vlad would be 280, and this is baking in that he improves. 280, yeah. 25 to 27 homers, 80 runs scored. I don't think he's going to score a lot of runs. He's really slow, and just the lineup around him is. It's okay. It's getting better, but and like 90 RBI. So I think that would be a fair projection for him.
That maybe not the RBI total because of where he bats in the lineup, but that sounds kind of like Mike Yastrzemski to me. So I don't know where you drafted Mike Yastrzemski. Probably not much higher than 91, right?
No. I think he probably should go around 100. I think that makes sense. But yeah. He's someone to me, and let's talk about Mike Yastrzemski, who I think is being disrespected in some of these early drafts. And the projection from Steamer, 247, 22 home runs, 84 runs, 8 steals. That's a solid player, but nowhere near the player that we saw in 2020, who was a top 15 outfielder in Roto. He was outfielder 9 in head-to-head points. This is a player, Mike Yastrzemski, with fantastic plate discipline. He had a 13% walk rate. The strikeout rate has been improving. He has great splits. He can hit lefties and righties. What is not to like about Mike Yastrzemski, Scott?
Well, I mean, the expected stats, according to StatCast, say he overperformed. He doesn't hit the ball especially hard. But the plate discipline is fantastic. He overperformed in 2019 too. So how much stock should we even put in that? He was being disrespected last year too. I wish I had gotten more of him because I kind of got scared away because nobody else seemed to like him. And I don't know, sometimes I do that and I shouldn't, but the big concern last year was, is he going to be an everyday player as a left-handed hitter? You know, how established is he in that lineup? But now that's not a concern. I mean, the Giants know he's their best hitter. They were batting him leadoff for much of last year. And I agree. He probably deserves to go right around 100th. He's kind of Max Muncy-like, but give him more average maybe instead of Muncy. Take away a little of Muncy's power, give Yastrzemski a little more average, and I think you're dealing with comparable players there.
Scott, it is time to guess the ADP for Mike Yastrzemski. Where do you think it is?
Well, I got him at 103. I'm going to say ADP is 123.
You were pretty damn close. It is 131.2. Over at the end of
season. I said 133. So didn't want to overshoot it again.
Going right around, just behind Alex Verdugo, just ahead of Ryan Mountcastle and Dylan Carlson. That's an interesting range of outfielders. Verdugo, Yastrzemski, Mountcastle, Carlson, all separated by 15 picks. All right. This is younger guys. Yastrzemski's not young, but he's new on the scene.
Mm. I like him. He's 30, believe it or not.
He's a great player for, if I can get Yastrzemski as like my outfielder 2 or outfielder 3 in a head-to-head points league where you only use 3 outfielders, perfectly fine, love it. There's a few other names I wanted to get to here, but this one specifically, I don't know if we've argued over Austin Meadows yet, Scott, but I think I am way higher on Austin Meadows than you are. And maybe Scott was the one who made the steamer projection for Austin Meadows because it's not very good. 255 yeah. Batting average, 22 home runs, 11 steals in 113 games. So they are expecting Austin Meadows to miss time. I don't know if this is fair, Scott. And then, like, if you do it for Meadows, you have to start doing it for other people. But I'm just giving him a pass for 2021. I mean, the guy got COVID right when the season was getting ready to start. So he missed the first couple of weeks. We heard about other players being affected. And it affects people differently. Freddie Freeman went on to win the MVP. He had COVID. He was fine once the season started. Yoan Moncada talked about how he didn't feel like himself all season because he had COVID. Maybe that was the case for Austin Meadows. He also dealt with an oblique injury. He was being benched in the playoffs against left-handed pitching. I'm not worried about that. He had good splits in 2019 against lefties, good splits in 2018 against lefties. I'm just really trusting the talent here, Scott. So I am not buying that projection. I think you get back to playing every day, 270, 25 homers, 15 steals, good counting stats in the middle of a solid lineup. I'm giving him a mulligan.
Yeah, it is a very pessimistic projection. A lot of it, I think, has to do with just how good the performance was and how surprisingly good the performance was for Austin Meadows in 2019. Like he had been a pretty high end prospect before that, but he wasn't projected for the kinds of numbers he delivered. Those really like tons of power, good average, pretty much across the board good. Even the steals weren't bad for Austin Meadows. And I would say just generally the amount of a pass I'm giving anybody for 2020 is it corresponds to how much faith I had in them coming into 2020. Austin Meadows, I ranked pretty high, but I found his 2019 to be difficult to explain. There wasn't when I tried to explain what happened to Austin Meadows in 2019, Well, they got an opportunity, you know, and particularly playing for the Rays, his opportunity is contingent on how well he performs. Like they switch around their lineup as much as anybody. I mean, basically every Ray, you look at my rankings, I'm probably going to be lower than the consensus because I am fearful of that. So, and we knew this heading into 2020. I was willing to make an exception for Austin Meadows because he was so good. I couldn't see how the Rays could justify messing with his playing time. But now they do have a pretty good justification after the year he just had. So I have him 120th overall. 16 or 17 spots behind Mike Yastrzemski. I mean, the same range if you look at my outfield rankings, but...
Damn, Scott.
That's a big downgrade from where he was coming into 2020.
So where do you have him in your outfield ranks overall? I don't know if you have that readily available.
I think he's just a little outside my top 30. I have Arozarena ahead of him.
Yeah, I have Meadows at 18.
Yeah, it's a big difference. Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest difference that we have thus far in our rankings, and I'm sure we'll find more throughout the offseason, but... yeah, I mean, the StatCast numbers in 2019 really supported what he did. I understand what you're talking about. Like, really wasn't a big power hitter in the minors, so the power came out of nowhere, but did have this big prospect pedigree. But the StatCast numbers backing him up in 2019 is what really leads me to trust in him and splits and everything that he did basically in 2018 and 2019. So I'm a believer in Meadows. Scott, not so much. We were going to get to Arozarena and Teoscar Hernandez. We've talked about those guys a decent bit already so far, and we'll have more time to talk about them. I do want to hit some of these questions that were sent in. Continue to send us your questions via Apple Podcast reviews and email us fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This one's from Brett. I am in a 10-team roto league, and we are allowed to keep a maximum of 5 players heading into next season. Obviously, ADP / last year's performance isn't always a major deciding factor here, as people tend to hoard younger players they believe in for the long term. Example, Trout has not been available to draft in the past 8 years. Rules for keepers are you lose a draft pick for every person you keep. If you keep 5, you lose your first 5 rounds of picks. You keep 1, you lose your first round pick, etc. Players I am considering keeping. Again, 10-team Broto. Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, Gleyber Torres, Manny Machado, Marcell Ozuna, Eloy Jimenez, Lucas Giolito, and Denelson Lamet. What do you think, Scott?
Well, Walker Buehler's the obvious one. I feel like Lucas Giolito is pretty obvious, too.
Yeah, I thought Machado, too. But I don't know if that's just me being a homer.
I mean, Machado's not young. I'm curious how... I don't know Marcell Ozuna's age off the top. Okay, so Marcell Ozuna's 30. You don't really know how many years of elite production. I mean, we don't even know he has 1 year of elite production left, right? Because... he performed at such a high end, about the maximum extent he could perform in 2020. And Jimenez, I mean, that's such a pedigree there, and he's off to such a good start. I feel like in this format, he's a must. So, and frankly, Gleyber Torres, he's going to be 24 going into this year. 2 of his first 3 years have been great. Shortstop is deep right now. I feel like he's going to wind up at second base sooner or later, which will actually be better for his fantasy value, just because I don't know that he's going to hold up at shortstop. So I think that gives us our 5, right? Buehler, Giolito, Machado, Jimenez, and Torres, which leaves Ozuna out. It leaves Lamet out, but there's a lot of health risk there. And Kershaw, as we know, is coming toward the end of his career. So I think I feel good about that 5.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the 4. I was leaning Kershaw over Torres. I mean, if you want to keep the youth factor involved, then sure, you could go with Gleyber Torres. But Kershaw,
right.
I think Kershaw could still have like two good seasons of production left.
I kind of bought into his explanation too much because we're talking only 5 keepers. We're talking only a 10-team league. That's pretty shallow.
Yeah, you want to dominate that pitching.
You probably should emphasize the year ahead. So I think I agree with you. Let's swap out Torres for Kershaw.
Let's do it.
And then we'll be good.
This one's from Keenan. 10 by 10. I would read off all the categories, but I'm not going to do that. 10 by 10 head-to-head categories. 3 keeper league. Teams transfer over for next season only. After that, it resumes being a keep three keeper league. So I guess they're carrying over just what they did in 2020 into 2021. All right, interesting. Trade Corey Seager and Zach Britton for Kenta Maeda and Kenley Jansen to bolster my pitching. Give away Seager in the deal. What do you think, Scott?
Giving up Seager and Britton for Maeda and Jansen. So it's basically Seager for Maeda. Straight up.
If you want saves, Jansen...
Yeah, I mean, Jansen, fair enough. It's not basically that straight up. Sorry, I'm butchering these emails. But I think you got to stick with Seager after the year he just had. I like Maeda probably more than the consensus. I have him as a top 10 starting pitcher. But I have him behind Seager, and particularly factoring in the keeper aspect, it might be a long time before you give up Seager.
Yeah, I lean that way as well. I prefer, even with getting Kenley Jansen, I prefer the Corey Seager side in this one. Corey Seager entering a contract year as well with all these other shortstops. It's Seager, Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor. They're all entering contract years. So if you buy into that type of thing. This one's from Jake. Which side do you like in a head-to-head points dynasty league? Juan Soto, Keston Hiura, and Eric Hosmer. Four, Freddie Freeman. This guy just wrote Julio.
Now that.
Which Julio would you assume that is, Scott? I mean, that could be Arias. That could be Rodriguez. It's probably Julio Arias.
It's probably Arias. Yeah, those are.
Let's assume it's Julio Arias. All right, so Soto, Keston Hiura, and Eric Hosmer for Freddie Freeman, Julio Arias, and Kyle Tucker.
Well, you're getting. I mean, it's hard to put much value on Hosmer in a dynasty league, right?
Agreed.
Freeman is the oldest of the rest, but he's obviously very good, and you're getting Arias and Tucker, two long-term pieces there with him. Soto is the most valuable of all and very young. Keston Hiura, a lot of upside, very young. That's really close. I think it helped to know the exact parameters of this dynasty league, how many are being kept and under what context, but just you attaching the word dynasty to it, I'm inclined to go with the Soto side.
It's hard to trade Soto for anything in a dynasty league.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm overvaluing him, but I think in a dynasty startup right now, Scott, head-to-head points dynasty startup, mm-hmm. I might take Soto first overall.
The way his career is starting, and frankly, he's even younger than Pujols was when Pujols was getting off to his start. And
yep.
Obviously, if you got in on the ground floor of Albert Pujols in a dynasty league, you had it made for over a decade. So I kind of agree with that.
Yeah. My original take, like Keston Hiura.
Especially if it's a points league. I mean, where you don't need the huge steals total of an Acuna or a Tatis. Mm-hmm. Soto with that plate discipline. This is a points league. So
yeah.
That makes it even easier.
And Keston Hiura, like he's not good in a points league. He strikes out a lot, but he's still young and he's flashed some upside. Yeah, I can't give up Juan Soto. It's a fair deal though. It's a good package in return, but I'm keeping Juan Soto there. Alrighty, so we're gonna wrap up. Just a reminder that tomorrow you will hear a podcast with Danny Vietti and Will Middlebrooks in your feed. Yes, it's supposed to be there. There you go. Scotty, he's back. He's got a Christmas tree. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Thursday. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. Men's National Team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me, and also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Fiori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Fiori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.